It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just ahead, we learn about the art of pumpkin carving, and we get tips from two Wisconsin pros. Now, Wisconsin businesses are working to learn as much as they can about artificial intelligence. The technology went mainstream last November with the launch of ChatGPT, and in fields like manufacturing and healthcare, it could have a big impact. Joe Schultz has more on what AI could mean for the state's workforce.
On the factory floor of KI's Green Bay plant, a robotic arm grabs metal pieces from another machine and drops them into a pile. Like many manufacturers, KI has been using robotics in its processes for years. Alex Peters is the automation engineering manager for the company, which makes furniture for offices and schools. And when he thinks about artificial intelligence, he sees lots of potential.
The way that I would enhance a cell with AI is I would use AI to just monitor the production output of this system. Then AI could determine whether this robot's at capacity, if there's spare capacity.
It's Peter's job to plan how the company will use new technologies to make the plant safer and more productive. And AI's been on his mind a lot lately.
For our automated systems on the plant floor, I could see AI being a powerful tool.
While Peters and others see opportunities for the technology, one of Wisconsin's largest industries may not be ready for it. A survey of over 400 manufacturing executives found that only 26% were either using or considering AI, and over half say it's not going to have much of an impact on their business. Buckley Brinkman is a Wisconsin manufacturing consultant. At a recent event in Green Bay, he said companies are underestimating the technology's impact.
I mean, we're pretty desensitized to technology that we introduce on the plant floor and eliminates jobs or changes the nature of those jobs. We're not so desensitized when all of a sudden you're a knowledge worker and two-thirds of your job can be done by an algorithm.
The healthcare industry is already using AI to diagnose diseases and predict effective treatments. That's according to Missy Hughes with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. She points to work being done by the Medical College of Wisconsin as an example.
They are using AI to predict and more successfully treat pancreatic cancer, which is one of the deadliest cancers that there is, and they're seeing results using AI.
Of course, we're still a long way from having AI replace doctors, but it is being incorporated by industries across the state. Kathy Henrich is with the Milwaukee Tech Hub Coalition. She studied AI and the changing nature of work in graduate school. She says the technology likely won't fully replace humans, but
you're going to augment those uniquely human capabilities with AI. And so those people that can successfully apply AI into their jobs and utilize it are going to be the most productive.
Henrich says businesses need to think about how to retrain their workforce to understand AI's capabilities. Earlier uses of robotics in manufacturing led to worry that factories would use the technology to cut jobs. While that happened in some cases, it also changed the types of jobs available. Right now, many Wisconsin businesses are struggling to hire enough workers. Kurt Bauer of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce says that's a sign AI probably won't displace many workers.
When I talk to my manufacturers who are investing in robotics and AI, if it displaces a worker, they reassign them because there's a workforce shortage.
We'll just kind of go ahead here and talk more broadly about artificial intelligence, and I promise
that's Jake Rohr of the consulting firm Whipley. In September, he presented to Northeast Wisconsin manufacturing officials. He focused on generative AI, like ChatGPT. It's a form of machine learning that uses data to produce text, video, images, and other content. Right now, Rohr says it's being used broadly, but that could change.
Just because there's probably not going to be one tool that everybody uses. You're probably going to go
artificial intelligence certainly poses risks. The technology is already being used to write spam emails or to create realistic fake videos known as deepfakes. Despite the risks, many business leaders say the changes AI will make to Wisconsin's workplaces are just beginning to be understood. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Here we are swimming under the full moon, the werewolf and the creature from the Black Lagoon. Dracula, what do you think of my new smash?
Whatever happened to the Monster Mash?
It's time to swim
It is the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We seek pumpkin carving tips from longtime carvers in Menominee because, you know, one wrong slice with that serrated knife and your pumpkin design morphs into a less desirable toothy grin. Call in with the question. You can share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Shannon and Jody Engel, they are a pumpkin carving couple. Shannon and Jody, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shannon, let's start with you. You recommend cutting a hole in pumpkins from the bottom. Why is that?
It just makes for a simpler carve. Plus, it gives you a flat surface to put the pumpkin down on. And plus, if you're using a candle or a light or whatever you're doing, you simply just set the pumpkin down on top of it. You don't have to reach in the pumpkin trying to light your pumpkin.
Okay, so it makes access a lot easier. You know, you mentioned glowing. What is your advice to make that pumpkin glow bright?
We use little LED puck lights, or we actually use LED. It's just like a regular light, light bulb.
So, Jody, you know, what are your shortcuts for getting the guts out of the pumpkin, you know, really quickly and efficiently?
Well, we have some little knives that work really well. You can get them in the kits that they sell in the grocery stores or Walmart, the Pumpkin Master kits. Those little tiny knives work really well to cut the pumpkin open, or the smaller drywall saws. So that helps to get it open. And then once it's open, the little scoops that actually come in those kits, the Pumpkin Master kits as well, work really good. And then after that, when you have the majority of the guts out, we use a sharpened clay loop tool, one of the larger ones, to scrape the surface from the inside that we're going to carve on, because the thinner that surface is, the easier it is to carve and the better glow you'll get out of it.
So you do recommend those pumpkin carving kits, you know, that you see at the store. Are they worth the money?
They are definitely worth the money. Yep. Learning how to use those and starting with your cutout designs, those are a fantastic tool to begin with. It has everything in it that you need, including patterns.
Oh, okay. Well, Shannon, go ahead.
One tip we have with the pumpkin carving, with the stencils that you put on, we use a ballpoint pen and we push really hard and we leave an impression, or if you got it, an engraver works really good.
Okay, so then that way you can kind of just follow those lines once you do the real chiseling.
Yes.
You know, what if your pumpkin has deep ridges? How do you deal with those ridges?
Pick a better pumpkin.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well,
if it's got really deep ridges like that, a stencil doesn't work really well, and you're going to end up having to use one of your classic jack-o'-lantern styles.
Jody, you talked about trying to get as much of the innards out of that pumpkin so you've got a thinner wall. Like, how much flesh do you need to remove to have, like, that good carving specimen?
Well, I usually try to get it down to about an inch thickness. You want to make sure that the little saw that you're using to do your cutout design, you want to make sure that that's going to go all the way through your pumpkin. So, you know, you want it scraped thin enough that saw is going to go all the way through. So you're making a clean cut through instead of, you know, only partial.
Okay. Yes. Shannon, I've seen some YouTube videos that are showing, like, people using power drills, power tools to do carving. Have you ever entertained that?
If we do what is called a craft pumpkin, we use Dremel tools and they work excellent. On real pumpkins, it doesn't work as great because it's the pumpkin flesh just kind of pushes out of the way.
Okay. And it splatters all over you.
Yes, it makes a large mess.
So as you pick that pumpkin and try to avoid the ridges, you know, what is a good pumpkin for carving, Jody? What do you look for?
Basically, we look for that smooth surface. You want to make sure that it sits nice and flat. Although by cutting the bottom off, you can help that a bit to get your pumpkin to sit nice and straight. And again, you know, that smooth surface, that's the most important part to get a clean carve out of it and a nice crisp, precise looking carve is that smooth surface. If the pumpkin has a flatter side with that smooth surface, it's going to be even better instead of like the super round ones that the design just pops out a lot better on a flatter surface.
Can you spot rot? Like, is there any signs on the pumpkin that you should look for, knowing that it could be rotting? Yeah.
Yep, you can. They'll develop soft spots. Sometimes you can tell by the stem. If the stem is really getting soft, that means that the pumpkin is starting to go bad. Actually, by thumping the pumpkin, I don't know how to describe the thump. It's just kind of a thud, I guess, on a pumpkin that's not good compared to a nice knocking sound maybe on a good pumpkin.
And we always cut the bottoms off our pumpkins before we actually apply the stencil to make sure we don't have a rotten pumpkin. There's nothing worse than a rotten pumpkin and trying to carve it.
That is Shannon and Jody Engel, their pumpkin carving duo, who push each other to take their designs to the next level. Call in with a question. You can share tips on carving, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. But if you're not there, you won't get kissed at the monster.
When the crypt doors creak and the tombstones quake, spooks come out for a swing and wake. Happy haunts materialize and begin to vocalize. Grim, grin,
it
and
is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Nothing welcomes trick-or-treaters on Halloween night like a glowing pumpkin grinning back at you. And we have veteran giant pumpkin carvers in Menominee, Jody and Shannon Engel, helping us novice carvers, you know, do better at this. Call in with a question. You can share your tips, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lisa in Brookfield is here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Good
morning. Yes.
And is there somewhere I can bring my pumpkin to have it carved and pay them?
Oh, Lisa, you were breaking up, but I think you want to know about if you can find a place that will carve pumpkins for you. Go ahead, Engels.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? I think we'd be busy all of October. I personally don't know of anyone that does that. We do mostly events for ours. So, you know, places like Lambeau Field and Titletown, Mall of America hire us to do their events for them. So we don't have much time in there to carve pumpkins. But, you know, in the area that you live in, it'd be worth putting it out there. Maybe you have a Facebook page you could ask on or something.
Yes, or it has to be someone's side hustle somewhere. Well, I want
right?
to, yes, let's talk a little bit more about the outlines and the stencils and how you feel about using stencils in pumpkin carving. Shannon, go ahead.
Stencils are a very important part of the pumpkin carving and also visualizing how you're going to do your cutout. It's very easy with a stencil to have to lose an eyeball, like you stated earlier. I can tell you right now, if you cut a piece of pumpkin off that you didn't intend to cut off, super glue.
Oh, okay.
Super glue will stick the pumpkin flesh back together tighter than you know. You can't even notice you made the mistake.
A little plastic surgery on that pumpkin.
Yes.
I've also heard of like a toothpick trick where you put the toothpick into the piece that broke off and then you stick it in. Would that work?
That works also, but gravity tends to pull it down. If it's on the lower part of your carve and you're sticking it down on there, it'll stick. But if it's something that hangs, gravity kind of tends to let it drop off.
Plus the toothpick gets wet eventually and kind of breaks, but a toothpick with the super glue would hold it into place nicely.
What I wonder, you know, what are ways to preserve the life of carved pumpkins? Because they're here one day and it feels like they're gone the next.
The best thing we can recommend is, if you have it, is refrigeration. If you properly, if you do a carve and you properly refrigerate it, keep it hydrated. That's the trick, is keep it hydrated and free of the molds and mildews.
When you they'll say hydrated, probably, do I like spray some water on it? What, how would you hydrate?
We actually spray a bathroom cleaner that has a little bit of bleach on it. I know a lot of people think that putting bleach on the pumpkins is a bad thing, but within 24 hours of putting bleach on anything, it turns into a dissolvable salt.
Okay. Well, you two have a really cool story. You operate a business and great pumpkins, and you also have apparently a friendly rivalry on carving.
Friendly is putting it nicely.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to try to navigate this in the best way I know how. How did you get into pumpkin carving together in the first place?
Back 14 years ago, almost to the date, this girl next to me, she sent me a invitation to a Halloween party, and I pulled into her driveway, and her driveway was full of carved pumpkins, and I thought, this person might not think pumpkin carving is so crazy.
It was love at first pumpkin sight.
Yep, hook, line, and sinker. All I had to do was carve some pumpkins.
Oh, dear. Well, then things kind of seem to get a little bit competitive this time of year. Jody, can you pick up that part of the story?
Well, you know, it's Shannon trying to top me, basically, because I've held the top position for about 14 years now. So he's always trying to best me on who can do the best carve. And it actually, I have it in writing that he said I was the better carver. So just gonna put that out there. But it actually helps to bring out, I think, better carves,
yes,
and more creativity out of the two of us having, yes, this little friendly competition.
And when we're carving at events, we're actually our backs are to each other a lot of the time, and the crowd is behind us, and we don't see what each other is carving, but we peek over and we her carve is coming out really good. I got to make mine better.
Shannon,
has a fan club that no matter what she carves, she could put a triangle in there and they'd vote for her.
Oh, now we're talking. Okay. What is the most, favorite carve you've ever executed, Jody?
Oh, boy. I really like to do the sculpted carves. So to make it more three-dimensional, like faces and different things like that. There's one that I did that was called, I called it Unmasked, and it was a face in the pumpkin, and then I took another pumpkin and I carved like just the traditional jack-o'-lantern face out of it and cracked it in half like he was pulling his mask away.
That was
one of my favorites.
Wow.
I also like to do the shaded pumpkins too. There's a few of those that I've done that I really like.
What do you mean by that?
So shaded pumpkins are where you don't cut through the pumpkin. You just scrape off the surface.
Okay.
And you can scrape it to different depths so that you get that shading in there when you light it up. The sculpted pumpkins, you typically don't light those up. That's your three-dimensional. But the shaded pumpkins, those are fun to do. That I like those better than the cut throughs because you can get all that dimension in there just through the shading and the light.
And Shannon, you grow giant pumpkins as well. Have you ever carved those?
Yes, we typically carve those two or three times a year. We carve them for Lambeau Field and at the Mall of America.
How long does that take?
depends on how intricate the carve is. And it's the same as carving the small pumpkins, but we just use larger tools and have more guts.
A lot more guts. I hope you appreciate seeds or can do something with all of those seeds. Oh, wow.
We go through a lot of them.
I bet you do. Well, Shannon and Jody, all the best to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Shannon and Jody Engel, they are a pumpkin carving duo in Menominee. And we have gotten tips from them. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. I'm breathing down my neck. Jump back, make tracks. Here comes the hunchback. Better get out of his way. Fee-fee-fi-fi-fo-fo. Vomit was a monster's holiday. Fee-fee-fi-fi-fo-fo. Vomit was a monster's holiday. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We visit the Platteville Business Incubator and explore its work to support businesses setting down roots in rural southwestern Wisconsin. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a mini radio drama that takes
Spooky
place in Madison
tales around Halloween
just in time for Halloween.
Spooky tales around Halloween have made their way into listeners' ears across the country since almost the birth of radio. In the spirit of this long tradition, we bring you The Haunting of the Orpheum Theater. Here's WPR's A. Emily Ralph.
It's a Friday night in October, and I'm on an American Ghost Walks tour in downtown Madison. This isn't for work or anything, just a normal Friday, but it really got me thinking. With so many reportedly haunted theaters here, I wanted to know which one was the most haunted. Built in 1926, the Orpheum seemed to call out to me, so I arranged to pay a visit. Looking up at this place, there's a feeling of unexpected time travel. Like, if you step in the wrong spot, you'd suddenly find yourself back in the roaring 20s. I've been here before, of course, but there's a strong deja vu. It gives me shivers. Anyway, time to go inside.
Hello? Hello?
Ah, yes, hello. You must be Emily. We've been expecting you. Let me show you around.
So excited to be.
If the outside feels like time slipping, the inside is kind of overwhelming. I can almost see all the layers of moments here, stacked on top of each other like sedimentary rock. But instead of fossils, there are, of course, ghosts. Tonight I'm hoping to find two of them. The original night manager and a head usher. I hear keys, but I can't see anything. I'll just put my gear down and fire up my spectral translator. Whoa, you're right there.
Oh, wait, you can see me?
Sure, I have this fancy deal I made.
Well, that's the cat's meow.
Thank you, I think so too. Okay, I have a few questions.
Why, certainly.
So you're the original night manager here?
I've always been the night manager.
So people know you for the sound of your keys. What's that about?
Well, you know, when you're bored and need to do something with your hands, and the noise is actually quite calming.
So interesting. Well, it was nice to meet you.
You too, Emily. Though, I think we'll be talking again pretty soon.
Hello? Hello? I hadn't read about any lady ghosts here. Okay, now let's see if we can find the usher. The legend is that he died falling from the balcony and spends all his time cleaning the floor where he fell. It's fascinating and horrifying, just the thought of being trapped in a loop like that, of doing the same thing over and over again forever. Ugh. Okay, I see a glow. Hello, are you the head usher?
I've always been the head usher.
Everyone keeps saying that. So my understanding is that you died here and just clean this spot every night? What's the deal with that?
Have you ever tried to get blood and popcorn oil out of a carpet?
Well, yes, once actually.
So you know it's basically impossible.
Sure, but... Wait, who is that? What's going on? What's going on?
Can you hear me?
And after three full nights, that's as close as our radio team got to communicating with her. It's amazing. Every night since her death in 1947, Emily has wandered the theater's halls with her recorder, always in pursuit of that one last story. For Wisconsin Public Radio, this has been Emily and the Haunting of the Orpheum Theater. I'm Sarah Hopeful.
WPR's senior spooky correspondent A. Emily Ralph produced that story just in time for Halloween. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And check out Wisconsin Life's Instagram page to catch a behind-the-scenes glimpse of the making of Emily and the Haunting of the Orpheum Theater. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over the past two decades, the Platteville Business Incubator has nurtured dozens of startups, providing office and manufacturing space, access to financing and business coaching. We explore how entrepreneurship in a rural area affects the southwestern Wisconsin economy. And you can join the conversation. Call in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kate Koziel is executive director of the Platteville Business Incubator and hosts the Driftless Makers podcast. Kate, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you so much.
Good morning. What are the biggest challenges you see that are facing entrepreneurs trying to start a business in your area?
Well, I think a challenge that face entrepreneurs, no matter where they're starting, is that they're usually very good at two or three things, but it really takes 10 or 12 areas of expertise or expert coaching in order to be successful. So that's what the Platteville Business Incubator does, and my board of directors, we kind of round out those skills so that no matter what line of work you're in, you've got sort of a well-honed machine that is able to continue to develop and grow.
Sometimes we may have this image that a startup is going to suck the life out of that entrepreneur, that they will be working 24/7. Are there aspects of that that are true or not?
Well, I think you've got to put some parameters around it. You can work on your own job or your own hobby, you know, 24/7. I ran my own business for 17 years, and oftentimes I did carry an idea with me throughout the evening and back with me first thing in the morning as you try to figure out the best plan. But, you know, to lead a healthy work-life balance, you do need to put up some rails so that you can step away. And oftentimes you'll come up with solutions when you're not, you know, sort of working very, very diligently to find it. You need to free up your time.
In the larger Wisconsin economy, we've been talking about the workforce shortages, the lack of childcare, and the lack of workforce housing. Are those things that your entrepreneurs struggle with as well?
Well, they are challenged, but oftentimes, you know, an entrepreneur may start with two employees or 10 or 15, which is easier in some cases to find, you know, that quantity of employees as opposed to, say, 300 that you might need to run a larger operation. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about the Platteville Business Incubator is that we have our own on-site daycare that's run by an entrepreneur. So if you're coming to the incubator, which is just one venue that you could start your business, we do have on-site childcare. Housing is a challenge, but, you know, the Driftless is much less expensive than some of the urban areas. So you can afford housing. And we're looking at ways to build new housing and, you know, make sure that we have housing that people really want. Not everybody needs a 4-bedroom, 5-acre lot. So we're rethinking zoning and everything else that surrounds housing at my work at the Southwest Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission.
Since your incubator opened the child care center offering, what have you noticed? What have been the effects?
Well, the child care offering, Imagination Station, is privately run, and they have really a wonderful program there. When I started my own business, I had 2 small children, and it was nice to have them sort of close at hand. So that's the great thing about the facility that we have at the incubator, and then there's several other facilities, and there's new ones opening in the region to take care of the child needs of young business people. It allows both parents to get back into the workforce too. So it's an important piece of the puzzle.
Walk us through the incubator and what the spaces are like, what the offerings are like to these new businesses.
So at the Platteville Business Incubator, we have small offices if you need to have a professional space or a space where maybe your cat isn't walking across your keyboard. and that can start as low as, $30 a month if you want to just have one of our co-working spaces. You can have private spaces, they move up. Let's say you have manufacturing, which is not as easy to do on your dining room table or even in your garage. Many people sort of outgrow their hobby or their side hustle into something more robust. So we host spaces from rent a desk all the way up to a 5 or 10,000 square foot manufacturing space. The building is one aspect, but it's really the mentoring and the coaching and the community that make the difference. In addition to the Driftless Makers podcast, we also have mashups, which allow all sorts of entrepreneurs to have that sort of interesting collision of ideas and be able to share and say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Are you good with that? And so it's really a building, but more importantly is the community and the mentoring that goes on in the building.
We're going to look here at the financial piece of this. We recently talked with Wisconsin Technology Council Director Joe Kramer, and this is Kramer talking about the need for more funding for startups.
We've been doing great in increasing the amount of early stage capital, but we're still nowhere near our neighbors. Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan all lead us by leaps and bounds right now on early stage investing.
Is Wisconsin's Driftless area in competition with Minnesota or Iowa for entrepreneurs?
Well, I wouldn't say competition. I think we look at it as everyone has a chance to rise. And so we work very closely with our partners, in Iowa. Minnesota's a little further afield, so not quite as closely, but we think that if a business is growing and developing, it's going to serve, both sides of the river. So we don't get too worried about that. But, Joe does raise a good point that funding is an issue, and we've addressed that in a couple of ways, but more is always of great value.
How have you addressed funding and access to capital for the startups?
Well, there's several programs that we run locally. One is the revolving loan programs, and so that's our opportunity to gap fund any businesses, and we've got $1.8 million in that in one of the funds that I run about 7 of them. In addition to that, we work closely with Idea Hub, and they are our local accelerator, and they are constantly looking at investors and making connections. In fact, coming up in December 13th at 3:00, they're going to do a in-person program called Fund Your Side Hustle. And that'll connect bankers and revolving loan funds and other interested parties. There's always going to be money for good ideas, but we've got to, again, make that connection. So if the entrepreneur is great at their work but not great at seeking funding, we've got to figure out a way to make that happen. And we work very closely with our, locally controlled and locally managed banks and other national banks in the area. So strong working relationships and working with the SBDC to make sure that there's solid, pro formas and projections and a solid plan. So it's really, it's a family effort.
Kate Koziol heads up the Platteville Business Incubator as we discuss helping startups grow, especially in rural communities. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Kate Koziol, who leads the Platteville Business Incubator, and we learn about aspects of rural entrepreneurship and how this organization affects the economy of southwestern Wisconsin. You can be part of the discussion along the way. Call in with a question. You can share your views, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Kate, you host the Driftless Makers podcast and you interview business owners from around the area. How does the podcast aim to help nurture businesses?
Well, I think every business that we interview, and we talk to both businesses and then services and entities such as Wisconsin Women in Business Corporation director, in order to provide answers and information. Many entrepreneurs are sort of, maybe they're solopreneurs or there's a small team that work together. It can be a little bit isolating. And I think that every single interview we do, you pick up a nugget. Like someone, we talked to Kyle at Vesperman Farms, and he launched a lemon flavored non-dairy ice cream, and he thought, this will never work. Well, it's very popular. So, you know, there's always a nugget like that an entrepreneur can pick up from the podcast that's valuable. And we try and keep it lighthearted, but very, very informative.
Well, let's hear just a bit from Kyle Vesterman of Vesterman Farms with his advice, offering advice to his younger self.
I think the biggest thing is, after something has happened, whether it's a success or a failure, and I have way more failures than I do successes, you need to really evaluate why it failed. Maybe the timing was wrong. Maybe the offering was wrong. Maybe you're just ahead of your time on your ideas because the crowd just wasn't big enough yet.
Kate, are you seeing entrepreneurs learning from each other and learning from mistakes?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no mistakes. There's just ideas that didn't execute well, and you can retool it or refine it. You can always learn from something. Yeah, we've had entrepreneurs in the region come to our Makers Mashups, which are these networking events, thanking us for producing the podcast because they don't feel alone. And this is a sort of a rural answer to their entrepreneurial question. So it's not something that happened in a distant place. It happened right next door or right down the road. So they feel very connected and, you know, part of that Driftless Maker circle.
What do you notice in the women who are behind startups in your region?
You know, the women in business have continued to grow over the years, and but it still can be challenging for women or for men or people that somebody thinks is too old to start or too young to start. We try and take special effort to make sure that women are empowered and engaged. Same thing with our minority populations and new Americans. We want to have extra support for them. And you just don't know what's achievable until you try. Coming up at our next Makers Mashup on Wednesday, November 15th at the Incubator, we're going to have Jen Schweigert, who started a workout facility, and now she's a global marathon runner. So she is racing in Boston and Dubai, and so we're going to talk a little bit about her story, but then also that inspiration and what drives your morning, and how do you really go from being, oh, I'm just a small town person, to, wow, I am one of the top global marathoners.
Kate Koziol with us, Executive Director of the Platteville Business Incubator, hosts the Driftless Makers podcast as we look at economic development in her region. You can join in the conversation. Your questions and comments, welcome at 800-642-1234. Kate, looking specifically at Platteville, your incubator often partners with UW-Platteville, which recently announced plans to cut more than 100 jobs. How important are the universities of Wisconsin to nurturing businesses and jobs?
I cannot tell you how important UW-Platteville is to Platteville and the UW system, which is just so highly respected. And even when organizations such as that face challenges or constrictions, we know that our partnership and relationship with UW-Platteville, whether it's, you know, their Huff Family Innovation Center, which is this massive makerspace, one of the largest in the Midwest, or working with, you know, their leadership on their entrepreneurship and innovation programs with Dr. Marsha Harbailey. I mean, even we partnered between the Southwest Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission and the university to launch Idea Hub. It was funded by the Economic Development Administration. It's so interwoven into our community, and it serves the whole region, not just Platteville. There's oftentimes where there's senior projects where we are working closely with senior engineering students and professors to solve real world problems. It serves the students and it serves the communities.
Can I pause right here with a terminology check? Idea Hub is an accelerator. You're an incubator. What's the difference?
So the incubator is more of it's a structure and an ability to take an idea and actually give it a space to work and further develop. The Idea Hub Accelerator, it serves in a variety of functions. One, it serves as a possible intake. So you've got an idea. Maybe I want to build a desk that, you know, grows with my child. Where do I take a great idea like that? And that happens to be my desk, which is working with Jeremiah and his team over at the Idea Hub. And then once that idea gets sort of proven and tested out, maybe she then needs a place to build the desk and manufacture it and ship it. Then she can come over to the incubator. So there's multiple stages when a company can get started. And if they come to me first and I have the resources, I solve it. If I don't, I can reach to either Maya at Idea Hub or any of my network at Prosperity Southwest, which is the larger 6-county entity that helps serve businesses and communities.
We only have about 30 seconds left, Kate, but, you know, population growth can be a driver of economic development. It can also change the character of a community. Are residents in Platteville, are they open to growth?
They are open to growth. And I will say that the Driftless region is open and available and affordable and a place to live your dreams. So come check us out.
Well, Kate, really appreciate this tour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. And I welcome any questions if anyone happens to be in Platteville.
Kate Koziol is Executive Director of the Platteville Business Incubator and host of the Driftless Makers podcast. The idea for this segment came from you. You can also check out our program page, find more conversations from the morning show, and send us your show ideas. Visit wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.